Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Midland Reporter-Telegram for Saturday, December 19th, 2020, weekend edition. Letters to the editor. Letters policy. Candidate and election-related letters have a 200-word limit. For other letters, the limit is 350 words. Letters must be submitted to letters@mrt.com. Deadline is noon Thursdays for the following Sunday. Reporter Telegram policy limits individuals to one letter in a 30-day period. Letter writers should include phone number and address. Failure to do so could delay letters publication. Criticizing someone's opinion is in poor taste. And at this point, I need to read an earlier letter so that you'll know what this letter is talking about. And this letter is a letter to the editor from the Midland Reporter-Telegram, Saturday, December 12th, weekend edition. And I won't read all of it. Letter perpetuated fake news. It was with absolute astonishment, disbelief, and sadness that I read a letter to the editor that you actually allowed to be printed in Sunday's paper. I am referring, of course, to the idiotic, unfounded, and just plain false assertions concerning contrails. You displayed the ultimate in journalistic incompetence by allowing this piece to make it past the trash can, let alone onto the printed page. And now I'm going to skip down to a paragraph that explains contrails. Condensation trails are just that, condensation. The result of burning aviation fuel with oxygen, which produces carbon dioxide and water vapor. At the high cold altitudes at which aircraft fly, water vapor condenses. Contrails have the same makeup as clouds. But since facts, science, reason, and rational thinking no longer seem to be available to some people, you have chosen to perpetuate their ignorance by publishing this drivel, thereby giving it credence. Now that you have some idea what this letter is about, that is in today's Saturday, the 19th edition, let me read the letter. Criticizing someone's opinion is in poor taste. To paraphrase the person who wrote the letter to the editor, letter perpetuated fake news in the December 12th Reporter Telegram, I was absolutely astonished and found it hard to believe that someone with such apparent command of specific facts could simultaneously be so devoid of the same. In short, it seemed obvious that the author knew little of the difference among truth, fact, and opinion. Further, the content of the earlier opinion that initiated the diatribe is not my point. Being critical of another's opinion by calling it, quote, idiotic, unfounded, and false, end quote, is in poor taste at best. Further, to accuse the MRT of, quote, journalistic incompetence, end quote, for publishing an opinion adds even more to the misguided assertions made by the individual who penned the letter. Rather, I find it absurd that one would actually put on the record that by not printing something the individual calls garbage and finds less than factual is not at the same time censorship. And to say that, quote, perpetuating the truth, end quote, is tantamount to freedom of speech and thus does not violate that freedom is to say that any speech is fine as long as one happens to agree with it. The fundamental purpose of the First Amendment is to allow one to exercise their right to speech, their opinion, etc. A very slippery slope accrues when that constitutional privilege is usurped in the name of fact, as long as fact is equivalent to truth as espoused by those, quote, in charge, end quote. I would hope that the individual rethinks how democracies survive. They do not long stand when others decide what is or is not appropriate to read, hear, see, and so forth, and when others unilaterally decide the difference between the fact and something else. When one asserts an educated electorate is one exposed to only one side of an argument, democracies will dissolve and Marxist regimes will soon prevail. Truth is not consensus, and fact is not universally true. I applaud the MRT for seeking to know and then report truth, fact, and opinion.
William Green. This is the opinion page. This column is entitled, Nation's COVID-19 Failures Extend Far Beyond Trump, by Megan McArdle, Washington Post Writers Group. After the last vaccine is injected and the last COVID-19 patient is released from the hospital, we will need a public accounting of all the ways our government failed, starting with the man at the top. Recrimination is already largely pointless, but preparation isn't, as this probably won't be the last pandemic our country faces. It's an oversimplification to say that President Donald Trump is responsible for more than 300,000 excess deaths. But given all the natural advantages our country started with, as varied as weather to Americans' penchant for personal space, we should have been one of the developed world's best performers instead of among the worst. Much of the difference between how the United States should have fared and how it actually did can be chalked up to the ways that Trump bungled the pandemic. Denying the seriousness of COVID-19 and spreading misinformation about treatments, turning minor precautions such as masks into political litmus tests, ignoring his own scientists, or worse, feuding with them publicly. Every time that the science clashed with the messaging, messaging won. Kyle McGowan, former chief of staff with the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, recently told the New York Times. Damage has been done to the CDC that will take years to undo, said McGowan, a Trump appointee, suggesting that this interference not only hampered the response to the pandemic, but also leaves us less prepared for the next. We need an inquiry to sort out what that damage is, how it can be repaired, and how best to prevent it in the future. The media are already performing postmortems on Trump's errors, and I suspect the Biden administration will happily extend their work. I worry, however, that they'll stop before giving the public a full and unsparing analysis of all the ways our government failed, including ones that have little to do with Trump. Some of these failures were as consequential as any of Trump's missteps, most notably the testing debacle that left us blind for crucial weeks as the virus spread undetected. Certainly that fiasco was compounded by Trump's flaws, including his notable lack of interest in addressing the situation. But the CDC's main reason for existence is to protect Americans from deadly disease. And after decades to prepare, it dropped the ball when the big one arrived. And Trump can't shoulder all the blame. Trump's failures were many. But he didn't sneak into a CDC laboratory at night and mess with reagents so tests wouldn't work. Trump didn't make the CDC ship tests to health departments despite knowing there were problems. Trump's political appointees, of which there were only four in the 11,000-person organization, did not cause the process failures, a lack of appropriate recognized laboratory quality standards, and organizational problems related to the support and management of a laboratory-supported outbreak response. Cited in a CDC internal review recently obtained by NPR. In fact, these sorts of problems long predate Trump. Years ago, there were issues with a CDC test for MERS, and again with the one for Zika. A scientist who was at the CDC during the Zika debacle told the Washington Post that the agency's COVID-19 testing failures reflected exactly the same mistake I saw during Zika. A structural problem, in other words, not a partisan one. The Food and Drug Administration similarly failed in a way that was predictable to its critics, a deadly lack of urgency and an aversion to altering sacred bureaucratic precedent, which manifested in a reluctance to authorize any test except the scarce faulty ones from the CDC.
Fixing such deep bureaucratic problems will require hard and unrewarding work, serving no partisan agenda, since what's needed is managerial reform, not bigger or smaller government. As with any such overhaul, many incumbent staffers will doubtless resist. And even if we persist with reform, there will be no real way to verify that it worked until there is another new disease to worry about. It won't be any easier for President Joe Biden to address the many problems evident at lower levels of government. States and cities were caught flat-footed, and many of those that failed catastrophically were led by Democrats, most notably New York Governor Andrew Cuomo and Mayor Bill de Blasio. Democrats will be tempted to take the easy way out of this morass, laying all the blame at Trump's door and suggesting the problems were solved with his leaving office. But this is a kind of a Trumpian fantasizing, the obvious villain, the easy conquest, the happily ever after. And that's unlikely to serve us all any better than he did. This column is called Opinion Extra. It is entitled, Education Doesn't Make the Grade During the Pandemic, by Jonathan Butcher and Lindsay M. Burke, the Heritage Foundation. When it comes to her daughter Emerson's education, Saren Warfield says she's in it to win it. When Emerson's assigned school in South Carolina announced plans for virtual learning this fall, Saren says she asked herself, what if we made this in my backyard and made a school? After talking with friends who have children the same age as Emerson, Saren said, let's do it. Instead of being a crazy idea, let's own this process and be really intentional about doing this and make it happen. Saren is one of the thousands of parents around the country who formed learning pods when assigned schools closed. By meeting in small groups with friends and neighbors' children, these pod families could try to keep at least one part of their child's life from being upended because of COVID-19. The time-honored practice of school assignment did little to help the Warfields or thousands of other students around the U.S. during the COVID spring and then COVID summer and fall. In the beginning of the 2020-2021 school year, officials in some of the largest districts in the country reported significant enrollment changes from the previous school year, especially among younger students. Officials in the Mesa, Arizona area reported a 17% decrease in kindergarten enrollment after the first 2 weeks. In Los Angeles, Superintendent Austin Buettner reported a 3.4% decrease in enrollment, but said another 4% of students couldn't be found, making the change closer to 7%. Figures are similar in Broward County, Florida, and Houston. In large school districts, these percentages amount to over 10,000 children per district. Some of these changes can be attributed to learning pods. But officials in large cities, and even those representing entire states, simply report having no contact with many students. Under normal circumstances, if thousands of children who were once in school suddenly were nowhere to be found, this would be an issue of national concern. Hearings would be held, and officials would demand to know what is happening with schools around the country. Loud calls for change would be heard. But life during the pandemic is anything but normal. Likewise, if more students around the country were failing, say twice the figure from last year, this would also be worrisome, right? From Los Angeles to Houston to Chicago to Fairfax, Virginia, school officials and researchers are now reporting that the proportion of students earning D's and F's in the first semester has increased, doubling in some cases, in comparison to the last school year. Yet across the U.S., many school districts, especially those in large metro areas, still remain closed to in-person learning for some, if not all, grades, and may not reopen at the start of 2021. According to the Pew Research Center, 72% of parents in low-income brackets report being very or somewhat concerned that this fall Their children are falling behind in school as a result of the disruptions caused by the pandemic. With thousands of students not in class, even virtually, and failing grades among those who are attending, who can blame them? For taxpayers and policymakers looking for lessons in the pandemic, the utter failure of school assignment systems to provide quality learning options to all students, especially the most vulnerable, is clear. The quality and consistency of the education a child received during the pandemic has been dependent on the attendance boundary in which that child's family lives. At the same time, so many of the issues plaguing education during the pandemic, and for that matter, the entire century leading up to the pandemic, are rooted in policies that fund school systems rather than individual students. Allowing dollars to follow children directly to any public or private school of choice is a critical emergency policy reform that states should pursue. Such a policy change is overdue. Since it's anyone's guess how soon life will get back to normal, we can't wait any longer for the system to fix itself. This column is distributed by Tribune Content Agency. This column is entitled "Christmas Lights Extinguish 2020's Darkness" by Kathleen Parker, Washington Post Writers Group. Let's just say, if it wasn't moving, I've already wrapped a strand of lights around it. And apparently I'm not alone. Driving around this town, or any other, these days is like visiting the Magic Kingdom, or Oz, or at least Fifth Avenue at Christmas time. As never before in my memory, the holidays arrived early this year with a feast of lights that suggests as much about our resilience as our collective need for a pick-me-up. As the worst year in several generations finally grinds to a close, we're celebrating not just the religious season, but also the end of a season of darkness. Between a relentless pandemic and a democracy-challenging election, our subtly brighter world heralds a common pursuit of happier days. What better way to summon new beginnings than by hanging wreaths, tying bows, and stringing lights from every bough and rooftop? Friends from across the country report similar manifestations of local cheer. I haven't flown since March, but I imagine the country looks like it has been invaded by billions of lightning bugs. My own house could serve as a beacon for lost pilots. Not one for excessive ornamentation, I typically cringe when stores put out holiday decorations early or force Christmas carols on shoppers before the Halloween costumes have been marked down. But this year, even I tossed out my own rule against anything Christmas until after Thanksgiving. And I could see through people's windows that I was by no means unusual. It wasn't long before I was in hot pursuit of the gaudy and the glorious. I've swagged the front driveway with garlands, red bows, and white lights. A light post is now wreathed and bowed. White lights run the length of the front porch, and two Christmas trees flank the front door. Where a tasteful wreath and a couple of poinsettias used to do, I was eyeing the last inflatable Santa during a recent visit to Lowe's, where I had sprinted to buy one of the last trees, and yes, to buy yet more lights. Lo and behold, nary a strand for sale. The shelves that just the day before, I go almost daily, have been laden with every sort of decor and enough candle power to light a small forest of firs, were now filled with empty red and green storage bins. Just a handful of trees remained. No white lights, no colored lights, no inflatable Santas. I was cheered by a story in the Post about a black Arkansas family that placed an inflatable black Santa amid their front yard display. When the family received a racist rant in their mailbox attacking their Santa, their neighbors in the mostly white North Little Rock neighborhood of Lakewood began putting up black Santas on their own yards. Yay, Lakewood! And welcome, almost, to 2021. The past year has left us exhausted from sadness, sickness, and death, from election denial, hyper-partisanship, and mean-spiritedness that has hovered over us like a low-lying toxic cloud. Away and begone with the hate and the greed. We're worn out and worn down by isolation, shutdowns, quarantines, homeschooling, economic turmoil, destroyed businesses and lost jobs, and especially separated from friends and loved ones. The absence of joy has haunted every household. Loss is our common denominator. So no wonder we've pulled out the stops. We've become armies of lamplighters, reversing the darkness and spreading the flame of civility and civilization from one front yard to the next. A shared ritual of belief in something greater than ourselves, and closer to home, belief in one another. These riots of light are about more than just our many December holidays. They're testaments to unity, communion, innocence, hope, and joy. One candle lights another, and another, and another, until the sun rises and the trumpets blare. Which is an excessively ornamental way to say that America's spirit of goodness, love, and charity is alive and well. You can see it twinkling everywhere.
Hello, this is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Opinion. Texas View. Here's how to win Black Latino trust in COVID-19 vaccine. The point, overcoming the deep-seated suspicion of a public health system that has often failed and abused people of color, will require work. Robert Luckey, the first person in the Houston region to get the coronavirus vaccine, is a registered nurse at Memorial Hermann, Texas Medical Center, a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, and is assigned to the hospital's COVID-19 unit. He is also Black. Why does that matter? Because the image of Luckey rolling up the sleeve of his blue scrubs to get the shot may help convince folks in Black and Latino communities that the much-anticipated vaccines are safe. Experience with the public health system that has often failed and abused people of color has sown a deep mistrust in those communities, even as COVID-19 ravages entire Black and Latino families and leaves others grappling with the economic fallout. Unlike the baseless fear-mongering of the anti-vaxxer crowd, which reflexively rejects most vaccines, concerns in communities of color about this new vaccine are real and understandable and require special attention. Community leaders and public health officials must work fast and hard to build trust, long fractured by historical trauma and mistreatment. In the Black community, there is the still vivid communal memory of horrors such as the Tuskegee study, a 40-year secret experiment begun in 1932 by the U.S. government, in which Black men with syphilis were told they were getting health care, but were actually left untreated, given only placebos, even as they developed blindness and other severe health issues, just so scientists could study the uninhibited progression of the disease. There are regular interactions with doctors whose personal bias affects care, and a growing body of research documenting how that bias leads doctors to discount the pain of Black people, including pregnant women and children, often leading to inadequate prescribing of pain medication. There is the palpable fear in Latino immigrant communities of any interaction with government officials, not to mention the recent reports of forced hysterectomies and other invasive surgeries performed on migrant women in U.S. detention centers. It's encouraging that polls this week show that as the vaccine is rolled out, more Americans are reporting they plan to take it. But there is still much work to do. A Pew Research Center survey in September found that 32% of Black adults would take a vaccine when available, compared with 52% of whites and 56% of Latinos. According to another survey by the COVID Collaborative, only 14% of Black Americans and 34% of Latinos believe a vaccine will be safe. 18% of Black Americans and 40% of Latinos think a vaccine will be effective. there is reason for people of color to be skeptical of a vaccine that has raced through development and trials in record time. But there is also ample reason for folks in those communities to line up when the COVID-19 vaccine is ready for distribution. Black people and Latinos are nearly three times more likely than whites to die of COVID-19. Vaccines will be a necessary tool for stopping COVID-19 from continuing its rampage through those communities and for building the herd immunity that can protect the general population. Dr. Jean I. Raphael, who studies health disparities at Texas Children's Hospital, told the editorial board. But overcoming the deep-seated suspicion will require work. Public health officials and elected leaders must spend time in communities of color and acknowledge the history fueling the skepticism. They must be transparent about the vaccines, how they were developed, how they work, what possible side effects there may be. Pledges by high-profile people, such as President Barack Obama and Houston Mayor Sylvester Turner, who have both said they will take the vaccine and are encouraging the public to do the same, will help. But to be effective, COVID-19 vaccination campaigns must enlist grassroots-level leaders, activists, ministers, primary care physicians, people already known and trusted in communities. It is not an impossible task. Childhood immunization rates, for example, in Black and Latino communities fall in line with overall rates. The COVID Collaborative Survey also showed that Black Americans who believe they have a social responsibility to get vaccinated, or who were surrounded by others who planned to get vaccinated, were more likely to get a vaccine themselves. But public health officials and politicians can't just parachute in and expect communities long overlooked, mistreated, and subjected to unethical experimentation to jump on board with COVID-19 vaccines. That will take commitment and compassion that should continue long after this crisis has passed. The Houston Chronicle. This is Kay reading the Odessa American for Sunday, December 20th, 2020. Other voices. Guest column. Thank you, Texas 11, for allowing me to serve. By U.S. Congressman K. Michael Conaway. The 11th District is special. We produce over 40% of our nation's energy, train over 13,000 intelligence professionals from each branch of our military, and raise and grow the agricultural products that feed and clothe this nation. But more than that, it is home to the absolute best people in the world. The people of the 11th District are kind, hardworking, honest Texans who have welcomed me with open arms and trusted me to do right by them as their member of Congress for the past 16 years. Trust is held in high regard in West Texas, and I have been honored to have that trust. No member of Congress gets to do what I have been able to do by themselves. It simply doesn't happen. I owe a special thank you to my wife, Suzanne Conaway, without whom none of this would be possible. But there are hundreds and hundreds of people across District 11 that have also played a direct role in the successes I have had in Congress. Thank you to every person in this district who has come to a town hall, stopped me in a Rosa's Restaurant dining room, called my office, or relied on me to advocate for their best interests in Congress. Our nation is up against some incredible challenges. We face a looming pending debt crisis that will soon swamp this country, a virus that threatens to wreck our way of life, and a great power competition with China and Russia. But I personally don't believe those are the most immediate threats that confront our nation. The United States faces a moral decline and the inability to self-govern. John Adams wrote that only a moral and religious people can, in fact, self-govern. This form of governance is unsuitable for anyone else. There are things going on in this country that God simply cannot bless. We use the words, God bless you and God bless this country, often. We sing it in songs. We use it particularly casually. But each time you hear those three words, God bless America, think about what we are asking God to bless, whether what is going on in this nation is, in fact, blessable. Since 1973, we have killed over 62 million babies in the United States alone. God can't bless a nation that continues along that path. At some point in time, he is going to say, enough is enough, and he will put the United States through the same crucible that he put the nation of Israel through in the Old Testament when they were going along a similarly destructive path. I fear that is coming upon us. There is a solution, though. The solution lies in the promise that God has made us in 2 Chronicles chapter 7, verse 14, which says, if my people who are called by my name will humble themselves, turn from their wicked ways, seek my face and pray, I will hear them from heaven. I will forgive their sins and I will heal their land. I argue that short of the Civil War, our nation has never needed healing more than we do today. We must, as individuals, as communities, and as a nation, claim this promise. My time in Congress has been the absolute highlight of my professional career. I will miss the colleagues who have turned into friends, and my staff who has become family. I will miss driving the back roads of all 29 counties in this great district, but most of all, I will miss you, the people of the 11th District of Texas, who have shown me grace and trust these 16 years. God bless each one of you. God bless Texas. And may God continue to bless the United States of America. United States Representative Mike Conaway is the retiring congressman of District 11. This column was originally published in the Midland Reporter Telegram. The Idle American. Merry Christmas. By State Representative Brooks Landgraf. From the bottom of our hearts, Shelby, Hollis Rose, and I want to wish you and your family a very Merry Christmas. We are so blessed to live in the Lone Star State, surrounded by our West Texas friends and family, during the most wonderful time of the year. Odessa is certainly a lot different than it was when I was growing up, but as much as things have changed and grown, the small town feel still remains. We know the cashier behind the plexiglass at the gas station. We take care of our neighbors, and we stop everything to come together as a community on Friday nights every fall. Bethlehem was also a small town 2,000 years ago, and like Odessa during a boom, it was pretty much impossible to find a hotel room for someone coming from out of town. Mary and Joseph were traveling to town for the census, a process that has been improved upon ever so slightly in the last two millennia. These were normal people going about their regular lives until, all of a sudden, they became the most important parents in history. Thinking back to how I felt immediately after the birth of my first child, I can relate to the simultaneous joy and fear that Mary and Joseph must have been going through in those first moments. Being a first-time parent is terrifying, but being the parents to the Savior of the world, now that is a horse of an entirely different color. In reading through the Christmas story again this year, I find myself taking heart in what the angel of the Lord said to the shepherds, keeping watch over their flock that night. Do not be afraid, the angel said, for behold, I bring you good news of great joy, which will be for all the people. No matter how hard life gets, the good news of great joy is the same. We have reason for hope, regardless of circumstance. For Christians, the good news is that Christ, our Savior, was born. For everyone, the Christmas season is a time for family and friends to gather together and share their love for one another, a time for those with abundance to give to those who are less fortunate, and a time to focus on others rather than ourselves. They must be pretty clear on their messaging up in heaven, because the theme of not being afraid is a common one throughout Scripture. The Old Testament tells us to be strong and courageous. Jesus tells us not to worry in the Gospels. And St. Paul tells us that God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of power and of love and of a sound mind. This Christmas, despite the trials and tribulations taking place from within and without, I will not waste time worrying or being afraid. There is reason for great joy this year, just like every other year. If nothing else, 2020 has provided all of us with an opportunity to prioritize what is most important. And for those of us going through Christmas for the first time without a departed loved one, my heart goes out to you, and my wish is that you are filled with pleasant memories and that you find comfort that you'll be reunited someday. My hope and prayer is that you and yours have the happiest holiday season ever. Merry Christmas. God bless Texas. Landgraf, Brooks Landgraf. Landgraf serves House District 81, which encompasses Andrews, Ector, Ward, and Winkler counties. Letters to the editor. Looks like the end to the GOP. I'm approaching 80, and I never thought I would see a large part of a major political party try to undo an election simply on the basis of we don't like the results. Time after time, the judicial process has shown there was no fraud that would come close to changing the results of the election. And many officials testifying to this are registered Republicans who voted for Trump. It's one thing for the hoi polloi, that's us, to be upset and even to publicly protest the results of an election. But for 17 GOP attorneys general and 126 elected GOP representatives to sign on to a totally unconstitutional attempt to overturn the will of the people, that is mind-boggling. And Alan West, Texas GOP leader, is suggesting that Texas might want to secede from the Union. What is wrong with the GOP? I expect this from Donald Trump. He is a lunatic. But I did not expect this from Mike Conaway, our elected representative. I did not expect Mr. Conaway to give his assent to trashing the Constitution. And I certainly did not expect 126 representatives of any party to associate themselves with such an attack on the democratic process. I see the GOP dying, and I hope and pray that the GOP that I described dies soon and is buried in an unmarked grave. There don't seem to be any principles left. It's retain power, nothing else matters. We need two political parties, but we don't need what's going on at the present time in the GOP. I was heartened by the actions of many GOP elected officials in several states who have stood up for the truth. As one said, numbers don't lie. I voted for Trump, but he lost the election. May this GOP rise from the ashes, and may truth rise with it. Joseph Weaker, Odessa. Merry Christmas to all. It's Christmas time, so I'd like to bring Jesus Christ into the mix. A declaration by Jesus has once again been proven as in, I did come not in peace, but with a sword. His message was that they who would disagree with his words and actions would come to divide us. They would divide fathers and sons, mothers and daughters, friends and nations, much like a sword separating flesh. They would control us with words and deeds that go against the teachings of Jesus and what Christian Americans believe. They would have us abandon our beliefs to embrace religions of so-called wokeness, political correctness, and dubious consensus while calling for steadfast loyalty. Those of you who understand what I speak of must resist these demands, as Jesus would have us do, using civil disobedience without violence, unless we need to defend ourselves against the violence brought on by those who would subjugate us against our will. To paraphrase a very wise man, those who would give up their freedom for a little security deserve neither. This brings us to the question of who are they? They are local, state, and federal politicians. They are neighbors, co-workers, and strangers you've not met yet. They are those too frightened to resist the subjugations mentioned. They are those who support Iran, Palestine, and others who would destroy Israel, and those who support the plans for a one-world order, with both being signs of the end times. They are the Democratic Party, with Democratic being an adjective which infers majority rule. It has become obvious that this is no longer the case. The 21st century Democrat Party is controlled by radical anti-Christians who would turn the U.S. into a one-party rule. They prefer to dictate rather than recognize the wants and needs of the majority. This form of tyranny was tried many times in history, always collapsing in on itself. Being raised by true Christian Democrats, I know there are still many true Christian Democrats out there. It pains my heart and soul to know the trespasses against Jesus the Christ and the Americans who believe in him are now many. To paraphrase another wise man, evil triumphs when good people do nothing. May God bless and keep America. James R. LeBlanc, Fort Davis. Our nation is troubled. In my lifetime, I have experienced two very divisive times as a nation. The first one was as a young man. Our country was in the middle of a war in Vietnam. As young men, most were asked to answer the call to serve. Several of us volunteered into the Naval Reserves while still in high school, awaiting active duty after graduation. I was assigned to an amphibious naval ship destined to the war. At the time, I never questioned why. It was pretty clear to me that the enemy was communist oppression from North Vietnam over the South. The South had reached out to our country for help over their oppression. I saw the purpose pretty simple. We were called to a foreign land to protect democracy from autocracy. That would also strengthen our shores and borders. Never could I have imagined that I would return home to a country in chaos, wounded and divided. How could we have lost the purpose of a war that had demanded so much sacrifice? As a young man, I was deeply puzzled. Time heals a lot, but the scars of war remain. The country moved past the era, and so did I. Those of us who survived and returned moved on into our careers and now into our retirements. With a little more time in my hands now, history continues to teach me through historical films and events. The history channels take me back to the days of the war and leave an image that answers a lot of the questions that had puzzled me all these years. When you see how the country was dealing with the war protests and the civil rights movement, while our military was concentrated in the war, the political pressure on our leadership was just as intense from within as from our foreign adversaries. A video of the last day of the war for us, as the president brought our involvement in the war to an end, formed a strong image for me. The South Vietnamese people running toward the last helicopter at the embassy, handing children and reaching up, hoping to be rescued. How do we define the purpose? It has never changed for me, but made me wonder how we could have become so divided back home. There were returning military personnel joining the protest movements. While at the war, we had been a strong, united force with a common purpose. Those that held purpose did not lose the grip to those that reached out to us. Those that lost the purpose turned their back and walked away, perhaps lost and feeling played and used. Today we find ourselves a deeply divided nation again, so much that we dare bear arms against each other. Without a foreign war in the picture, that divisive spirit is stronger than ever. It crosses family, neighbors, and friends throughout our nation, as it also did during the war. It touched our nation through someone close to us. Classmate Ronald Forrester, cousin Amado Valencia, amongst the 58,000 that paid the ultimate price. The Lord tells us there is no greater act of love than a man lay down his life for his fellow man. Only when we embrace the purpose will we validate the act. Patriotism and democracy has to have deep meaning. It is time to put down the ammo and arms, lay down the divisive spirit of hate. Agree to disagree our political issues with respect and love for each other. We need to reach out across that strong divide, form a strong grip and again be a united nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. May God heal our nation. May God bless our nation. David Valencia. Turmeric, the cause of stomach upset? Dear Dr. Roach, I have been using turmeric on my food for quite a while. I've noticed I've started having bouts of diarrhea. I found others' reports of this when searching on the internet. I might quit taking it to see if the diarrhea ceases. Do you have any other information on contracting diarrhea with turmeric? W.T. Answer. Yes, I have seen this before. It has been well documented. Turmeric is used by many people just as a spice, but it's also taken for the medicinal properties of curcumin, which is an anti-inflammatory used by many people for arthritis and other conditions. Curcumin is the key substance for the reported health benefits of turmeric. It needs to be taken with other substances, such as piperine found in black pepper, to be absorbed well. The reports on diarrhea with turmeric or curcumin are conflicting. Some authorities say it is dose-dependent, meaning it's more likely with higher doses. Others say the opposite. Some say it goes away in a few days, but my clinical experience is that some people do not get better. Staying off of the turmeric for a while to see if the diarrhea goes away is a scientific way of determining whether the turmeric is the likely cause. A careful record of how often you had diarrhea before and after the turmeric is useful. If the answer isn't clear, you can restart and see what happens to the frequency afterward. To your good health, Dr. Keith Roach. Roach's column appears Tuesdays through Saturdays. Readers may write him at P.O. Box 536-475, Orlando, Florida, 32853-6475. This is Kay, reading the Odessa American for Tuesday, December 22nd, 2020, etc. Gifts for grandkids are left behind at Grandma's house. Dear Abby, I raised my kids right as a single mom. I took pride in supporting them and giving them what they needed and wanted. I have a daughter who lives out of town with her husband and children. I don't get to see them often, so I love buying them gifts that are waiting for them when they get here. For the kids' birthdays and holidays, I always have nice gifts for them, too. For the past few years, my daughter has refused to take any of the gifts home with her, so the toys sit in my spare rooms. She smirks and laughs when someone says something about leaving behind the gifts I buy. She and her husband stay at my house when they visit, so the kids play with their toys then. I'm hurt by her lack of appreciation and have decided to stop buying anything for the kids on holidays or birthdays. I don't enjoy giving monetary gifts. I want to see the kids' faces when they open a present and play with it. Would it be wrong for me to just stop buying gifts? Generous Granny in Ohio. Dear Generous Granny, this is something you should discuss with your daughter. Could it be that your grandchildren have so many toys at home that there isn't room for more? I'm not sure why your daughter would smirk and laugh when someone mentions the gifts left behind when your family leaves. That kind of behavior is rude. But I don't think children should be punished for something their parent does. To deny them gifts on birthdays and Christmas because of it would be petulant and a mistake. Dear Abby, my mother is close to death. I haven't had contact with her in 30 years. While we were growing up and even into adulthood, she was incredibly abusive, neglectful, and manipulative. She didn't provide the basic needs of food and clothing for us. She prioritized her boyfriend over us kids and engaged in crazy behavior. She would chase us with knives, walk around naked, and expect us to accompany her to throw garbage on her boyfriend's car. I'm not a bad person. I don't wish any harm on her, but she's not part of my life for a reason. As she approaches death, how do I deal with this? No one should die alone. None of my siblings want anything to do with her either. What do I even say? Post-traumatic in California. Dear post-traumatic, what do you even say to whom? To the person who informed you that your mother has little time left? To your mother, if you choose to be with her? Are you sure your mother wants you there? Because you asked for my advice, I am suggesting that you may have fewer regrets and less anger, righteous as it may be, if you are with her at the end. You don't have to say anything more than, "Mom, I'm here for you," if you don't wish to. From your description of her, your mother may have had serious emotional problems for much of her life. Please allow me to offer my sympathy. Dear Abby, Abigail Van Buren, write Dear Abby at P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069, or visit www.dearabby.com.
Jacqueline Bigger Stars by Madeline Aslan. Note, Bigger Stars is based on the degree of your sun at birth. The sign name is simply a label astrologers put on a set of degrees for convenience. For best results, readers should refer to the dates following each sign. A baby born today has a sun in Capricorn and a moon in Aries. Happy birthday for Tuesday, December 22, 2020. Profound, patient, and prepared, you are in it for the long haul. A project you passionately believe in begins and succeeds brilliantly in 2022. Your strongly controlled emotions will find an outlet this year. If single, you tend to be solitary, but you do fall in love this year, in May. If attached, your relationship adds much richness to your life. Gemini is light and almost ethereal compared to you. The stars show the kind of day you'll have. 5 dynamic, 4 positive, 3 average, 2 so-so, 1 difficult. Aries, March 21 through April 19. 4 stars. You becoming more assertive about pursuing career aspirations and are unusually competitive. The world is at your feet if you control irritation about financial matters and direct your attention to solving the problem. Tonight, your health improves if you take a break from work. Taurus, April 20 through May 20. 5 stars. Today is a curious combination of focus on material security and mystical awakening. You are aware of different levels of reality unfolding, or life's many marvelous dimensions. There are surprise discoveries about those to whom you're closest. Tonight, in wonderment. Gemini, May 21 through June 20. 5 stars. Opportunity comes through enlisting support today. Select friends and ideals that will uplift you. Political interests strengthen. You could get involved in community issues centering on life quality in the neighborhood. The way is clearer, and answers come. Tonight, networking online. Cancer, June 21 through July 22. 4 stars. You long for success. Take pleasure in your work for its own sake. A surprise may befall you at work. New career developments turn out to be a blessing. Friends help you reach your goals. Tonight, walk outdoors and enjoy the winter landscape. Leo, July 23 through August 22. 3 stars. It's a perfect day to brush up on skills and review old interests. Travel plans change, and a vehicle may need replacement or repair. Have alternative transportation in mind. New perspectives regarding spiritual practices are developing. Tonight, enjoy the art and foods of other lands. Virgo, August 23 through September 22. 5 stars. Reach out to those you admire. The realm of fairy is opening. Heed portents from the fey ones. Color and sound are especially important. Wear a bright garment and enjoy holiday music featuring harps, panpipes, and flutes. Tonight, immense enjoyment. Libra, September 23 through October 22. 3 stars. A relationship has wonderful potential, but it is up to you to nurture it. You must strive to resolve disputes. Be calm with troubled individuals. Keep a perspective and laugh at little problems. Approach others with suggestions and ideas. Tonight, dinner with a loved one. Scorpio, October 23 through November 21. 3 stars. A clean, organized environment aids well-being. Clear away debris. Be aware of how companions affect you. Think for yourself. Those who disappointed you in the past might do so again. Acquire new knowledge and wander different pathways. Tonight, philosophical. Sagittarius, November 22 through December 21. 4 stars. There is a zest for adventure. You are ready to experience all that life has to offer. You're more unpredictable than usual. Children are enjoyable company. It's the perfect time to plan a future with the one you love. Tonight, date night. Capricorn, December 22 through January 19. 3 stars. Don't put off essential repairs. Family members are restless. Allow them to grow. Be flexible to cope with challenges. It's not the time to repeat the same old patterns. If you're not content, experiment. Tonight, find a springboard to growth and guidance. Aquarius, January 20 through February 18. 4 stars. Neighbors are friendly, but can be a bit demanding. Use care in making promises. Your sense of humor helps keep relationships with siblings smooth. Ignore their little peccadillos. Tonight, you will have new insights about childhood friends and school years. Pisces, February 19 through March 20. 4 stars. Be realistic about purchasing on credit. Make practical decisions about your job. Don't gamble with security. Extra reading and research enhance earning power. Your flair for communication affects your income positively. Tonight, time spent alone is refreshing and healing. Born today, composer Giacomo Puccini, 1858, rocker Morse Gibb, 1949, actor Ralph Fiennes, 1962.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.